The Ocean Park Community Podcast, bringing you the history of our neighborhood through stories from residents. You're listening to Part 5, Wrapping Up. In our final discussion with Pete, Ed, and Don, we'll hear a collection of stories from their youth.
One time, one of the mailbags on the delivery side slipped off the post and went underneath the rail car. Now, the rail car dragged the bag a good portion of the way to White Rock, which was
spreading them all.
Now, we're going to use miles for this. In kilometers, it would be 4.5, 5 kilometers, about 3 miles. So now,
picking mail up.
The world had come to an end because the Royal Mail bag had been destroyed. So everything came to a stop for the mail. So anyhow, Mr. Hughes asked a bunch of us kids down there on the beach if we would help him walk along the tracks to see if we could recover mail. And we found all sorts of mail along the track, and some of the letters were cut in half, and they were in tough shape. Some were floating in the water in the beach. So we walked from here to White Rock with Reverend Hughes, who was the postmaster, and we gathered what mail we could find. 100 to 150 letters in a bag in those days, because it was the only way the mail could get around.
And mail was the only way people would contact.
Yeah.
Even my mother-in-law received a letter from Mrs. Terrell. She was living down here, and only about, it'd be a mile away. They'd send letters back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, I got a new recipe. I got a copy of the recipe that she sent. And with the Ocean Park Post Office, used to have the stamp canceled with a time on it and everything.
Right.
And then they put it in as the smallest post office in the world. And it was in Ripley's, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And like I say, the reason there was lots of mail is because that's the only way we could communicate.
Yeah.
And we had no telephone or anything like that at that time.
Yeah.
Like, it was really had one with a crank on it, the corner of it.
Yeah. You crank it, and it'd ring a bell, and you get the operator. And it was really.
And I cannot remember. I believe the mail delivery was once a week.
Yeah, probably. Twice
a week at the most,
yeah. Right.
And that's why there were so many letters in the bags and that. And the bags were quite heavy because old Reverend Hughes was no kid.
No.
So we used
he was a retired reverend.
And, of course, we made a sport of getting the mail bags up and down the hill. Downhill, you usually see how far you can kick it. And they knew who we are. You know, there was no running off with the mail. So,
You know where we live?
Yeah.
Where was it?
It was at Ocean Park Road and North Bluff. At the bottom of the hill there.
Right down on the
southeast corner.
Probably 4x6.
It was pretty small.
The postmaster's, there was enough room for one person to go in through the front door, and there was a little counter that maybe 2 feet wide.
Yeah.
And the postmaster was standing behind that, and there was enough room for him in behind him for 2 or 3 mailbags. That was it.
And then you have to sort in front of him. You'd walk him. He'd walk him back and forth.
Maybe 8x10.
Yeah.
So there was, I don't know how many boxes there ended up when I came.
I don't know. Went up to about 25 or something.
I think
like that.
We were 28, something like that.
30 boxes.
If we look at the old picture of the post office, you can count the boxes. Then they had that other addendum to it where it was just the boxes out the back door.
And they had a little lean-to. You could wait for the mail to come to.
I think they reached a point where they didn't have any more boxes, and so the people that came later had to go in
into the front.
Because I was sharing box 15 for years that they and things would come general mail or 15 and the postmaster would put them in. So then we would when they made the other ones, we were box 48.
Sam Elmo High School drew from what, Don, we'll say a 10-mile radius?
Yeah, but even before that, the little school down at the Crescent Annex had 4 rows, and there were 4 grades.
Yeah, so.
So you can imagine teaching a thing like that, and that gives you a rough idea of how many people there were around here.
Yeah.
There weren't very many, and they were very close, and they all they were associated very much with the Ocean Park Hall, where they used to have a players group here that I'm getting a little off subject now. But anyway, they used to have a players group here that performed full plays on the stage at the Ocean Park Hall. And they'd do this every once in a while. But there was also the Ocean Park Hall was sort of for, used to play.
They had whist drives
and they played cards up at the Ocean Park Hall.
And bingo and
simple things like that. No one was
basketball.
No one was into bridge. There was a boys club at the hall where we had calisthenics and tumbling and basketball and this sort of thing. And
everybody stuck together.
It was generally lifestyle and everybody working very much in harmony with everyone else.
What about when the grocery store burned down?
I would think the era that we're talking about here in the 40s, that between Crescent Beach and Ocean Park, full-time residents, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find 50 families.
I guess so, because I looked at, my dad said one time that he thought there was only 35.
Yeah. But all of these roads around here were trails at that time.
Yeah, they were. They were knocked through.
Yeah. There was no pavement.
No. Yeah. Yeah. See, Samuel High School at that time, I started in Samuel High School in 1940, in the spring of 1948, and I was in grade 7, and the total population of Samuel High School from grade 7 to 12 was 350 students, and that was from White Rock, Ocean Park, Crescent Beach, Elgin, Hazelmere.
Yeah.
So that's all, you know, that shows you how many people there were here. And then there was only three small schools. There was the Crescent Park. There was the, what we now call the Annex on the Ocean Park Road. There was the Halls Prairie School, Elgin. And there would be East Kensington School. That was it.
Well, Elgin School there, too,
The Elgin, it would still be going then,
Yeah, we'd have to take buses at that stage of the game because the schools were so far away from the
And that's another story, too.
Yeah.
Buses, traveling the buses the kids used to do. They used to put a potato in the tailpipe. And the bus, boom! And the kid, and what the bus driver would do, if he caught you, he took you off, and you had to walk home from where he stopped.
And you might be off the bus for a week or two.
The bus and with the concrete floor.
There used to be a lot of chicken farms here. And the sport was in the afternoon coming home from school, because you were heading home from school now. So when you went by the chicken farms, half the boys on that side of the bus, the chicken farm side, would pull the windows down and lean out and start yelling. And, of course, the chickens would all be running to the barns. So it was chaos. So finally, after a few of the chicken farmers talked to the school board, we were threatened with death or no more. And it's too bad we can't remember more.
Yeah, you know?
Because
5 years ago, I could remember just about everything.
We used to spend a lot of time with the kids that came out in the summertime to the church camp, especially with the guys, because then there was more guys to play baseball against.
Yeah.
And, of course, with the girls, we were threatened with death if we came near the camp.
So
the counselors would kick us out. But
we used to go to Mr. Gifford. Remember Mr. Gifford?
Yes.
Yeah, that little, he was the camp
coordinator. Camp maintenance guy.
Yeah. So he had a little tool shed he had a lathe and all these different things in there. And he took us kids and said, come on, you can use them anytime you want.
In the wintertime,
And the lathe, we'd be able to turn things on the lathe you know.
Was it Frank Gifford?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And he was from Toronto. He was a professional baseball umpire when he moved out here. He's an elderly man, retired. And another thing is, too, we had a lot of people with talent here. I mean, people like Peter's mother was a glider, first glider person.
Licensed pilot, yeah.
A pilot, and my father-in-law was a concert pianist, and his wife was, and they played one time in the CBC orchestra, and he wrote classical music for
Vancouver Symphony Orchestra.
He sent it to be published, and they said, "Oh, the readers loved it, but we couldn't sell it. It was too difficult to play." He played one little tune there, and I said, to him one day. I says, why don't you send it back to them to get it? Oh, he says, I give up on these people. Yeah. He says, I just sent it. These, because he wrote for dual pianos, and, yeah, yeah. And some of his reaches were 10 instead yeah. of 8. And he really was really played. And he actually went to see Rachmaninoff in Winnipeg. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And he died about 10 years ago, at 96.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
One of our fellow students at SEMI
yeah.
is Bob Langlands that just got that.
Equal the Nobel Prize.
The Nobel Prize for mathematics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If mathematics, physics.
Yeah, he's being awarded that this summer sometime yeah. in Norway. Yeah.
And he's going to yeah. get a million krona or something, yeah. which is yeah. $800,000.
But he's known around the world now.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And he's famous doctors from here, like guys have gone on to sport, one of the MIGs, what's that, sports doctor. He's been all over the country as a sports doctor for these different baseball and football teams for guys that get all broken up and stuff.